madness, folks. It's madness. Welcome to the program. It's Wednesday.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Yeah, it's been a long time since Maxwell Egan was on the program. The great man makes an overdue return. Max Egan joins me live from Peru a little bit later this hour, and then he stays with me until the end of the program. Lots to talk to about with him. Of course, he's a terrific researcher. He's an artist, of course, and a social justice campaigner. I'm happy to put questions to Max. Tweet them to @RichieAllenShow. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. I say this every night, but I have to say it. Those are the contact details. Get in touch and stay in touch. Broadcasting live on alternatecurrentradio.com, fabradiointernational.com, and of course on davidike.com. Do check out davidike.com/headlines for all the, well, for top analysis of all the big news stories of the day. It is Wednesday. It is July 27th, 2016. What a miserable summer it's been thus far here in Manchester. It's terribly depressing. It really is. It's abysmal. I don't know what else to say about it. I can totally understand why it drives people absolutely bonkers. There we are now, a couple of days away till the end of July, and it's just been miserable. A week or 10 days of decent weather late June, but since then, it's been grey, we've had rain, it's terrible. But there you are. There, I suppose when you've had over 8 years in Spain, as we did the future Mrs. Allen and I suppose, you kind of got used to that, or I did get used to it. But there, I'm not going to bore you to death with any more weather talk anyway. Bet you're looking forward to Max Egan. Drop me an email, drop me a tweet, and let me know if there's anything you'd like me to discuss with Max specifically. David Icke, of course, is on tour. I'm going to keep mentioning this as well. He's in Melbourne this coming Saturday. For details on that, go to davidicke.com or go to theworldwidewakeup.com for tickets, because there are a few tickets left. Indeed, I believe there are. They have just made some front row tickets available for that. Every single event on the tour has sold out before the actual event. It's been so well attended and incredibly well reviewed as well. So if you get a chance and you're in Melbourne to go and see David, do yourself a huge favour and go and see him. He'll be glad to see you. Well, today more and more bizarre details emerged about the murder of the priest in France yesterday near Rouen. They've named the attackers today, one of them being 19-year-old Adel Kermiche, who was known to police for twice trying to join the terror group in Syria. Now, if you heard the news there, Natalie, on Feature Story News, she said the French authorities were facing more and more criticism and they were embarrassed at the revelations that, yet again, and we say this all the time, these people were known to the police, because the second attacker involved in murdering the priest yesterday, it was a guy called Abdel Malik, 20 years old, another homegrown killer, according to the Daily Mail today. And he was also on bail for alleged membership of a terrorist organisation. This is bizarre. And a third man, a 16-year-old Saint-Étienne resident, was arrested and is being questioned relating to the attack. Now, the French Interior Minister, I mentioned him yesterday, a man called Bernard Cazeneuve, he's the Interior Minister. He said today, and it's kind of telling, I think, that there will be 10,000 new military personnel mobilised. So 10,000 new military personnel will be mobilised, and they are going to patrol Paris and suburbs of Paris. Presumably, they're saying they're going to trial this. He also said, did Bernard Cazeneuve, that French people are queuing up to join the army reserves. He said they were being inundated with applications from French people to join the Army Reserves. People are motivated. Patriotism is up. People want to get involved and they want to stop the dastardly terrorists. Now, RT.com or RT Russia Today News, I'm beginning to get a bit depressed with it. I think as an organisation, it's moving, I think anyway, it's just my opinion, it's moving a bit closer to, I would say, the ground that's ordinarily occupied by the BBC and Sky News. It's becoming very mainstream. Mainstream light or mainstream. I'll give you an example of it. RT interviewed US diplomat John Graham. He's also an expert in international terrorism, is John Graham. And they interviewed him today. And I'm going to play a clip from that. Have a listen to this.
If I may, I would like to comment on a little deeper side of this issue rather than just the tactical side. Last time I was on this program, I said that that ISIS had changed its tactics and we needed to be aware of that. And it was now striking soft targets because it was losing the ground wars in Iraq and Syria and Libya. And we would see more, not less, of these attacks. And, of course, what just happened in Rouen bears that out. But to sort, to begin to sort some of the complexity from this, it's useful to look at the motives of why ISIS is doing this. One reason is to instill fear. One of their major initiatives is in France or in the United States or Russia or any place else that's a target. They want people to be afraid because frightened people make terrible decisions. The glue of society starts coming apart and ISIS wins.
You could hear that on any mainstream news program. Disappointing to hear that on RT. More disappointing that the host doesn't challenge that narrative. Then he said, did John Graham, the US diplomat, that ISIS wanted to influence elections so that we elect right-wing nutters, because apparently that's what ISIS wants, because they want an Armageddon-type ground war in Syria.
Another factor, and some may disagree with this, is that I think ISIS very much wants to influence elections in Western Europe and in the United States this year, especially electing right-wing fear-mongering politicians. And make no mistake about it, right-wing fear-mongering politicians are not opponents of ISIS. They are partners of ISIS in terms of increasing fear. And the last point is that ISIS is doing this because it wants to pinprick the West with small attacks here, large attacks here, to the point where we lose our patience and overreact militarily and start a large ground war, restart a large ground war in the Middle East, which is exactly what ISIS wants. That's what their whole thing is about, is creating a massive land battle, a religious war in the Middle East as a path to Armageddon and their rapture up into the paradise they seek.
It's so wide of the mark that it's untrue. And what's particularly disappointing about that, I think, is that there was a time when RT would have given some space, not a lot now, it's not press TV, but RT would have given some space to those of us asking questions about the anomalies surrounding these attacks. You know, people not making any grandiose statements, but just asking a few questions about the anomalies. But they're not doing that anymore, RT. It's very, very disappointing to see that. I don't know what's going on there. Now, you might have heard today, this is really, this is extraordinary stuff, you know. None of it is surprising to us who do programs like this. But it's still nonetheless extraordinary. A charity, well, it's the NSPCC, is training its counsellors to help parents who fear that their children are being radicalised. So the NSPCC said its existing support line could now advise parents worried about extremists grooming a child. A lot of talk about this today. A lot of talk. It said that counsellors were being trained to spot warning signs such as children isolating themselves or talking as if from a scripted speech. Recent terror attacks, says the BBC today, highlighted the growing problem of individuals being influenced by extremism. The charity, NSPCC, said it had already started getting calls to its free 24-hour helpline from people worried about the problem. Now, they spoke to a woman today, the BBC did, called Khadija Kamara. She's from Brighton, the lady. Doesn't say where she's from. I think she's originally from a country in North Africa, I think. She said her son Ibrahim became radicalized and went to Syria, where he was killed fighting in Syria. She said there were signs that you just don't think about. You ignore them until after it happens, and then you think back, and then you realize what was going on, she said. She said her son Ibrahim became withdrawn. He would look down on other Muslims if they were not practicing enough, and he spent a lot of time outside the house, and he was difficult to contact. Holy shit! That fits about 5 million teenagers in Britain, doesn't it? Withdrawn, looking down on people, not practicing their religion enough, and a lot of time outside the house and difficult to contact. Talk about generalisation there. Anyway, Khadija Kamara said, I didn't realise he was being radicalised, blah, 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 blah. It's extraordinary. They don't say too much about the training for these NSPCC counsellors. Apparently, it's just that it's all very vague in general. Extremist recruiters befriend vulnerable targets online, feed them ideologies, and in the worst case scenario, persuade them to commit terrorist attacks. This is not going on, by the way. It's not happening. I said this last night. I'm not going to repeat myself. I'm not going to bore you. This is not going on. Vulnerable, depressed people are not being groomed on the internet to then pick up a knife or drive a car or find a gun and go to kill somebody. It's not happening. Not happening. Listen back to the first hour of last night's programme if you didn't hear it, and it explains it. At least as I believe it to be, anyway. They want us to believe that these radicals convince these kids they can be part of something special, and they brainwash them from a distance. They go on to say, isolating yourself from family and friends, sounding like you're talking from a scripted speech, showing increased levels of anger, wait for it, becoming disrespectful and asking inappropriate questions. What the hell is an inappropriate question? I wonder. This is what's coming down the line. This is the re-education centre future, you know. This dystopian Orwell-type lunatic future where anybody who whispers anything that isn't approved of by the state or by the agents of the state is suspect and is open to surveillance and maybe being taken in and questioned, maybe even worse, maybe detained indefinitely because of their opinions. ISPC, or the NSPCC, the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. Absolutely unbelievable. You think they'd have more to be doing than this nonsense. There's so many children they could protect. Thousands of children vanish from foster care every year in this country. Where the hell did they go? These are children, many of them wrongfully stolen from their parents. Where do they end up? The NSPCC might have a look at that. Might be more interesting. Paul Joseph Watson, eh? David, I've known David Icke for a few years, as you know. Said it before. He comes on the programme regularly. And he's been researching, writing and speaking for 25 years. Well, it's over 25 years now. I mentioned today on Facebook, you could count on one hand the amount of times David has had a pop at a content creator in the independent media. He doesn't do it. Something he doesn't do. But he had a pop at Paul Joseph Watson today, asking a question. David was asking a question of Watson's latest Muslims are going to kill us all videos. Watson makes a lot of these videos about the so-called religion of peace. And he's very pleased with himself, is Paul Joseph Watson. And he loves this phrase, the religion of peace strikes again. He repeats it over and over and over again. Doesn't matter that it makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, we all know Paul Joseph Watson is no intellectual heavyweight. But it does grate on you. I've had a pop at him recently and I'm going to have a pop at him again now. He couldn't help himself yesterday after the murder of a priest in France. He put a video on YouTube. Feast your ears. This is what Watson had to say.
If we can't identify the problem for what it is, how do we even begin to tackle it? Our media and political establishment is more concerned about people being mean to Muslims than the fact that European streets are running with blood several times a week now because of violence committed by Muslims. I predicted that Germany was next in line for a fresh bout of cultural enrichment.
What I'm predicting is this is going to happen in Germany. There's going to be a massive attack, and there's going to be a massive backlash.
Because the mass molestation of over 1,000 women in Hamburg and Cologne, which the media and authorities also tried to cover up, just wasn't a large enough serving of diversity. It wasn't a difficult call to make, given that the German government admits that it's lost track of at least 130,000 migrants. Whoops! That Syrian migrants are now going all-out jihad isn't a surprise, given that 21% of them support ISIS. Given that 22% of young Muslim migrants living in Germany support suicide bombings.
Paul Joseph Watson. Not well, I would guess, and I say that with no malice. Looking at Watson, looking at his demeanour and his eyes, I would guess he's not well. He's incredibly angry. And he's also incredibly wrong. In fact, he's always wrong. I know a broken clock is right twice a day, but Paul Joseph Watson is always wrong. David Icke ran the video today and asked, Paul, why are you condemning hate with hate in your eyes? And why are you buying so many official stories without question? Just asking, wrote David. Now that's a good question, and I've been asking that of InfoWars in general and Watson for a while. Why are they, stroke Watson, buying the mainstream media's narrative without questioning it? Why are they parroting it? Watson says 22% of the migrants in Germany support ISIS. 21% support suicide bombings. 25% of Muslims in France support suicide bombs. Where the fuck did Paul Joseph Watson get that from? I'll tell you where he got it from. Right-wing newspapers like the Daily Mail. And he just parrots it. That's unbecoming of somebody who claims to be the antidote to the media on the front lines of the information war. You're just repeating what is in the Daily Mail. And then he does a long-winded, boring interview with scumbag Tommy Robinson, Jesus Christ. A woman beater, football hooligan, proper low-life thug. I mean, do your homework, people. Even the lunatic right-wing people who sometimes listen to this programme, the far-right nutters who believe people like Robinson, he's a thug. And I say interview in inverted commas, because Robinson is just sitting there with Watson, well, he's not with him, he's on Skype, agreeing with him over and over again. Muslims are taking over. The sad thing about Paul Joseph Watson, the really sad thing is, his act is so old, it's got cobwebs on it. And it's not even his act. I said previously, he's just a poor man's Ann Coulter. You know Ann Coulter, been around for years, long before Paul Joseph Watson, saying the same bullshit. In fact, Coulter spoke with the BBC's John Humphreys even, back in mid-May.
What's the rationale for saying all Muslims should be banned from the United States?
The rationale is 9/11, Fort Hood, Boston Marathon, San Bernardino Community Center, any number of other terrorist acts, and when they're not, I haven't finished, I'm still answering. When they're not committing terrorism, flying planes into our skyscrapers, and shooting up innocent civilians, what good are they? They're on welfare. They're committing small petty crimes. They are completely ripping off the government.
Does that sound familiar? Have a listen to this.
Shooting up an office party in California, torturing and massacring concert goers, murdering people outside bars in Paris, blowing up airports and metro stations in Brussels, gunning down gay people at a nightclub in Orlando, ploughing down tourists with a truck in Nice.
9/11, Fort Hood, Boston Marathon, San Bernardino Community Center, any number of other terrorist acts, and when they're not, I haven't finished, I'm still answering. When they're not committing terrorism, flying planes into our skyscrapers, and shooting up innocent civilians...
Paul Joseph Watson, you are the most boring, one-dimensional, one-paced, monotoned, half-baked autodidact that has ever bestrode the independent media. A world-class Muppet. No more, no less. You know, with Jones and InfoWars, the editorial used to say, and I know because I listened to it for a long time, there's an elite agenda to bring about a global, mass global depopulation event through Agenda 21, through Agenda 30. And this is what we're heading into. Now, today, it's the Muslims. It's the Muslims. It's the goddamn Muslims. Paul Joseph Watson has never had an original thought in his life. And he, I think, unwittingly plays his part in dumbing down the masses by simplifying what's going on. It's black and white, no shades of grey. I've wasted too much time on him in the past, but I wanted to remark on David's calling him out, because David is so patient, and it's so unlike him to do that. He's not remotely hot-headed or reactionary. But I like to have a good rant at what used to be the independent media and what now is nothing other than a gigantic corporation fighting with Fox, fighting with CNN and, well, any other mainstream network in the United States for the centre ground or the centre-right ground in US media. That is all they are, and I won't be wasting another second on them. Back in a minute.
Join in tonight's discussion by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
And thanks very much for your tweets. It's at Richie Allen Show, richie@richieallen.co.uk. D tweets, Irish Radio this morning, they were warning parents not to let children watch the news in case they asked awkward questions. D, which radio station was that on in Ireland? Do let me know, please. Somebody called at 23 Grandma asked me to get Tommy Robinson on the show then. No, I interviewed Tommy Robinson on the radio in Spain, and so unprepared and so embarrassed was Robinson that he hung up halfway through the interview. When I asked him questions about beating a woman who used to be his girlfriend in London some years ago, when a plainclothes policeman had to pull him off her, and he hung up. And I only brought that up because he was saying that Muslims like to beat their women. Tommy Robinson is scum. And he will never appear on this programme. We'll get into... I mean, it's an oxymoron anyway. You can't get people with that train of thought. There are no intellectuals with that sort of opinion. Idiots. Idiots. Playing the parts, playing the roles designed for them by the system. Fostering hate and division. Completely not understanding what's going on. Can you say ignorami or ignoramuses? Is it ignorami? Ignoramuses. That's all they are. They don't want to listen to the truth. We know damn well what's going on. I'm not going to repeat what I said last night. How these people commit these terror attacks, the ones that do, not to mention the false flag attacks committed by the security services, not to mention the absolute hoaxes that never happened. We know why these things happen. Guys like Watson and Tommy Robinson are Muppets. As I said, half-baked autodidacts. Nothing else. Not an intellectual bone in their body. Idiots. They're worse than Sky News and Fox News and CNN. They're worse. Because they should know better. Anyway, 28 minutes past the hour. Hi to Wayne, hi to Adam. The Twitter handle is at Richie Allen Show, by the way. Hubertus as well. Stephen Lash, how you doing, Stephen? Mark, and I did see something that grabbed my attention a little bit earlier on, and I was tweeted by Alpar, and Alpar printed off some flyers of the Richie Allen radio show and delivered them around Southampton today and was leaving them on cars. Alpar, thanks so much for doing that. It's a wonderful thing. I'm really thrilled about it. In fact, I just retweeted the picture that you sent me of the flyers. Thanks for doing that, mate. That's a wonderful thing. And I'm humbled that you would even do it and that you would give some of your spare time to doing that. Terrific stuff. Right, time for some music while we get our first guest on. Our only guest, I should say. He's not been with us since last November, so it's been a long time. Max Egan joins me on the Richie Allen Show after this from Morrissey. We don't mind people being vegan and vegetarian. It's a good thing. But don't ram it down people's throats, no pun intended. He's been known to stop gigs, Moz, because the smell of a burger van from 2 miles away is putting him off. But I love the man anyway. So he's in Manchester on the 20th of next month. Can't wait for that. I'll be taking my holiday at that time. Come on, Moz. Great stuff. The more you ignore me, the closer I get, probably telling that in terms of our next guest, who's not been on the program for a while. No mischief there. It's just the way it's been. Late last November, I think he was on the program. He is a top man. He's a musician and artist, and very good he is too. I always describe him as a social justice campaigner and researcher. And he's been investigating things, geopolitical things, social things for years, and asking questions that the authorities, the establishment, whatever they are, don't like being asked. It's terrific to welcome him back to the program. He's in Peru. What a wonderful place that is. I've not been there, but I know all about it from listening to David Icke talk about it. Let's welcome back our own Max Egan. Welcome back, sir. How are you?
I'm good, Richie. Thanks for having me on again, brother. Nice to talk to you.
It's been a bloody while, hasn't it? And there's no reason for that, but better late than never, mate. Great to catch up with you again. And there's so much we can chat about in the, well, I suppose, 75, 80 minutes that we have. Loads of people asked me to ask you about Pokemon, because you've been saying stuff about that. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But how have you been since you were on last? What's been happening?
Oh, I've been good. I've been traveling around doing speaking dates and catching up with people in Spain and in Amsterdam, and learning sort of medicines and all sorts of things like that. It's been kind of interesting, sort of jungle medicines, and coming back here to hang in the jungle for a while and hopefully get the a new film made by the end of the year. Sort of back here because it's just cheap to live here, you know. I mean, I can afford to actually maintain if I live in a third world country. That's the way it's sort of gotten. So I'm not here to do anything sort of exotic in the jungle, but just basically kick back in a cheap environment with some nice people and work on a film. So that's the plan until the end of the year. Then I head back to Australia around about October, and I'll be there until February when I go on tour again. So, yeah, it's the plan for the moment.
Good stuff. I imagine, I mean, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you before. I spent a few weeks in San Jose, Costa Rica, and I was supposed to stay there for a year. And I done the TEFL, Teaching English as a Foreign Language courses, and I was proud of myself. I got the top marks, not the top marks, but I did as well as you can do. And I thought, this is going to be great. And then I met the future Mrs. Allen just before I left, Max. So it screwed that up. So while I was there, I was thinking about this French woman that I'd met, and I gave up on the idyllic life in San Jose, Costa Rica, and came back. But I tell you what, Max, it's very similar to where you are in Peru. There's nothing like being there, is there? I mean, for the soul, go on.
Yeah, it is. Look, it's lovely. I mean, it's different here to what it is in Costa Rica. Costa Rica's nice. Costa Rica kind of reminds me a bit of Byron Bay in the northern New South Wales region of Australia, only, of course, the elevation is up a lot higher, and you've got a whole bunch of active volcanoes, which can kind of mess up your day. But as far as the environment goes, it kind of reminds me of that. It's quite hot. But here where I am in Peru, I'm kind of in the jungle.
In the jungle,
so
yeah.
It's very humid. Something you've got to deal with here is, like, you've got to wash your clothes, like all of your clothes, once a month, whether you've worn them or not, because they go moldy. You know, things just, you know, electronic things break down all the time. Your joints sort of mess up, you know, all the little connections. You know, the people that I live with here have to have two of everything, like two washing machines, two refrigerators, because you know, there's one working while the other one's in the shop being repaired. That's kind of the way it is. So it's kind of, you got that jungle environment. Everything starts to rot after a while. But, I mean, it's good. I don't know if I could live here permanently, but it is good in small doses, like 6 months at a time. You know, I can handle here is quite nice. Then you kind of feel that you've got to get away and get back to somewhere a little bit saner for maybe a month or two, just to kind of ground yourself a little bit more.
That being said, Max, what one of the things I was going to get at there about Costa Rica and about Central and South America is undoubtedly the people are more social there. And I know you're in the jungle, but when you go down into a town, people have so much more time for one another, don't they? They want to get to know one another. They're interested in one another's lives, not just out of nosiness or imposing on people, but they care about one another.
Oh, they do, you know. There's still a sense of family here. You know, the families are very close and very connected. You know, large families that all sort of share space together and all very connected. And it's good. I mean, I really like the people here, and I really like the culture, and I really like the grounding that I get here. And also, like, even with the government, I mean, the government may be corrupt. I mean, let's face it, the government in Peru is corrupt. It all runs on bribery, as most of the third world does. But I'd prefer that than the covert corruption that we see in Western countries like in England and Australia, where it's just as corrupt, but it's under the counter, it's behind the scenes, and they pretend that they're not. And you can actually just disappear off the street and, you know, into a black hole. At least here in Peru, I mean, you can bribe your way out of anything pretty well. I mean, you can't talk to the police because they're still human, and they're as open to suggestion as everybody else. I mean, we had a situation here where we had kind of land invaders coming around near the property. We tried to get the police involved, and they wanted 10,000 soles to come and deal with the problem.
How much is that, Max? How much is that, as a matter of interest?
That's about $3,500 US.
Is it? That's a lot of money.
And that's because we're gringos. That's because we get armed people on our border creating a problem. Guns and shots are being fired, and we want $10,000 to come and look at it, you know. So you know you're dealing with corruption, you know. Of course, when the locals wanted to have the people come out, the police came the next day. But if you're gringos, well, you guys have got money, so yeah, otherwise you wouldn't be here. It doesn't matter if you're poor and you're living in the third world country because you have to. You're white, so you've got money. So if you want us, well, you got to pay. And that's the way it works. And I kind of prefer that in a way. I prefer the open corruption. I mean, in Australia, that sort of a situation, or in America, you'd call the police, they'd probably arrest you. Just because you called them, they'd arrest anybody that they can, get as much revenue as possible. I mean, you know, I kind of prefer to deal with these type of real people. I mean, the whole system's corrupt anyway. It doesn't matter what country you're in. I prefer to know what I'm dealing with, to be honest.
You can see the whites of the rise. It reminds me of Spain. When we lived in Spain, it was common knowledge that a lot of English and Irish people drank and then drove home. It still goes on in Spain. And if you've got enough euro in your wallet and you're pulled over by the Guardia Civil or even by the Policía Local, if you got a 50 or 60 euro max, they'll just go away. You know, that's the way. Now, I'm not speaking from personal experience, but the future Mrs. Allen ran a bar there successfully for a number of years. And that's what people did. And they would brag about it. You know, I got stopped just before Marbella the other night. Now, you have had experience of Spain. Visiting friends in Spain, so you know all about this. That's the way it goes. It's great to have you back in the program. Max's website, by the way, is thecrowhouse.com. Go to thecrowhouse.com and find out more about Max. If this happens to be the first time that you've come across the man, great to have him on the program. What have you made of events of the last couple of weeks, Max? I've got to ask you about that, because obviously the big stories today are that the French police knew all about these guys that murdered the priest. One of them was due to have an electronic bracelet on him, but they were taking it off in the morning or deactivating it. Both of them had trials pending for being members of a terrorist organisation, and one of them allegedly was twice he then tried to get into Syria to get involved in the mayhem there. I'm guessing what's coming, but over to you, mate. What do you make of all of this?
Oh, look, mate, all of these things are staged. It's theatre. I can't even keep up with the amount of false flags now. You know, like while I was in flight, there was like two while I was in transit back home from Spain. You know, you just can't even keep up with them anymore. You know, I haven't even really looked into who's behind them and because it's all the same. It's all the same. It's always the same consequences. It's always more legislation. It's always right on the verge of, oh, we were just about to change things, and oh, dear, now we can't. You know, all of this, it's so scripted and so contrived. You know, and the last 18 months, it's been ridiculous. It's just escalated to a ridiculous degree. You know, like everywhere, like so many attacks and so many instances. It's like whenever there's a problem, they just stage another false flag attack, distract everybody, bring in new legislation, and away we go on our merry way of, you know, destruction and more war and more loss of rights and everything they're doing, you know. It's so hard to keep up with it all. I mean, thank God there are still people that are bothering to look into it and put all the details out there. But like I said, I mean, there's so many now, I just don't even bother. I just wait for everyone else to post the details. And I know what it's about anyway. I mean, I know they're all scripted. You know, I put out a show a few weeks ago called A Brief History of Government False Flag Terrorism. And I went through at least 50 or 60 false flag events that have been openly admitted to by government. You know, this is stuff that they've readily admitted that they staged themselves. And when you look at them, these go like way back to World War One, and these are all events that have shaped, you know, our world into what it is today, that have been used to implement legislation and bring about wars and conflicts and all the things that have happened that have brought us exactly to the point we are now. And 50 or 60 of these major events have been staged by government. So when you look at that, you know, why would anyone see that and then look at what's happening in the world today and think for a minute that these events weren't again being staged by government? You know, and you look at things like the Kalergi plan, and you look at their whole plan for the destruction of the peoples of Europe through mass migration and all the things that they put out there for years, and we see it all unfolding right before us. And yet people still question it. What blows me out is that there's so many people in the alternate media that see all these false flag attacks and know that they're false flags, and yet they still buy into this whole Islamophobia and all the stuff that the government's selling to go with it. You know, people seem to be, you know, half in the matrix and half out of it. It's really bizarre.
Are they half in, half out, or is there something more going on? I've recently, for the first time in my career, it must be said, decided to speak about another program, something I've never done. I came from mainstream radio and national radio, and you don't speak about the competition. Now, I'm not saying that I'm in competition with anybody today. I'm not. But when you're in commercial and national television and radio, you are competing with people for ratings and for advertising. One of the things that was a no-no was that you never, ever spoke about anybody else that was doing anything, because you always look bad. You know, I can't be coming on here going, that Max Egan is some idiot, isn't he? And his mates, you just look like an idiot, Max. And rightly so. When I say you, I mean me. But I've had a lot to say recently about a guy called Paul Joseph Watson, who's been working with InfoWars, which has grown into something extraordinarily huge now. It's got its own satellite network now. It's a multi-million dollar operation. And it used to say that InfoWars, the editor, and I've known Alex Jones years and years, been speaking to Alex for a long time. And it used to say there's an elite agenda to bring about mass depopulation on this planet, to pit us against one another, to create false flags, to do all of these things. That used to be the narrative. The Alex Jones narrative today and his minions is vote Donald Trump. The other political parties and politicians, they're responsible for all the death and destruction because they keep ignoring this Islamic terror and they keep letting people into the country, and maybe we should put a ban on Muslims coming into the country. What's going on there, Max? Am I wrong? Are people like me wrong? I mean, David Icke had a pop at It Today, and he's never had a go at anybody in the 25 years he's been doing anything. But so pissed off is he to see that he's actually jumped on it and said, well, I'm not having it anymore. This is outrageous. Where do you see that?
Well, I would say that it indicates that the whole InfoWars thing has been controlled opposition from the get-go. And that now that we see the end game sort of actually ramping up, they're supporting their candidate. They've totally flipped. You know, and you've got to look at the internet and what InfoWars has done. I mean, Alex has spread a lot of good information to people. He's woken a lot of people up in a lot of ways. But you look at the internet. I mean, what is it? I mean, the internet, it's been great. We've been able to share information and all that sort of stuff. We've been able to connect each other. But it's also given the government the means to keep tabs on everybody. And by presenting things like the way Alex does and getting people riled up and angry and getting all these people, you know, screaming and doing all these radical chats to each other and all this sort of stuff, they can now know where all the dissidents are. And so now he's sort of pushing the political agenda the way I believe he always has been. I mean, they don't call it the net for no reason. They don't call it the web for no reason. It is a web and it is a net, and it's caught a lot of people. They know where all the free thinkers are now. And I think Alex Jones has helped very much with that. I mean, I've always been on the fence when I've looked at him and thought, well, you know, people called him controlled opposition and said all sorts of stuff. But I've always thought, well, you know, maybe there's a place for him. Some people need to be yelled at. You know, there was a video clip that I saw a few years ago where he completely interrupted a gun rally that I found very disturbing. He just completely came in with his megaphone and started shouting over everybody and utterly ruined the rally, which was actually a good rally and very productive rally they were having, and he kind of obliterated that. So I kind of got a little bit sus on him then. But now with this whole turnaround and this pushing of Islamophobia and this whole vote Donald Trump, I just think that he's been bought and paid for. I think he's been controlled opposition all along. And it's sad to say, but and look, I don't speak out against people either. You'd never hear me talk against people on my show or post any negative stuff about anybody on my website or anything, regardless of what I think about them. So as much as I don't like to say it, the stance that they're taking at the moment is playing directly into the hands of the ruling parasites.
One of the things, I mean, I'm going to defend him just a little bit here. Not that you're attacking him, you're not attacking him. But I've been attacking what they've been doing recently. I've been concerned about it for a while, but only recently have I decided to have a go. It was after a video they posted about the Orlando false flag shootings. And I got a bit pissed off with that. And I did a monologue on it and I put it out there. But this is the guy who did, to his absolute credit, infiltrate Bohemia Grove, where some of these elite psychopaths go for a retreat every year, and they worship, well, it's a satanic ceremony that they do, and it opens up all sorts of questions about Satanism and maybe about satanic child abuse and stuff like that. And he did that, and I remember him doing that when he was the subject of a Channel 4 documentary back in 2000 or 2001, I can't remember. And I thought to myself, whenever I think back, and I still have that bit of fondness for him, I think back, Max, that he did that much. You know, and he did interview people like David Icke over the years when, I'm thinking going way back, when nobody, when it was difficult for David to get any sort of a hearing on radio. And Alex was building an audience and he brought David on and stuff like that. So I'm not sure if it was always the case. I'm not sure if money is a motivating factor, Max. You know, if they are trying to position themselves as a kind of a mainstream light organisation, because ultimately there is a lot of money in that.
Well, there is perhaps money as a motivation, but I have to question how he got into Bohemian Grove. I mean, there's a lot of security in Bohemian Grove, and there was a certain amount of disinformation in that as well, the whole concept of Moloch and all that, which is not what the owl represents. It's actually the owl of Minerva, which is, and Moloch's always represented by a bull. So, I mean, there's all sorts of disinformation in there, but I have to question how he got in. I mean, let's see if anybody else can get into Bohemian Grove. You know, there's a lot of security. There's cameras in the trees, motion detection. There's all sorts of stuff, I've been told anyway. So I'd question how he got in there with a hidden camera for a start if he wasn't allowed in there. So, you know, I mean, you've got to question the whole thing. I mean, I question everything these days, Richie, I really do. You know, my recent trip through Europe and all this sort of stuff and speaking to people on the ground, you know, I hear about all these reports of the revolutions in France, the riots against the labor reforms, how there's a million people on the street. It's been going on for a month and the police are getting so tired they can't deal with the crowds anymore and all sorts of stuff like that. And, you know, I see these reports, but every time I see a report, it's the same photograph of this big crowd in the city square in Paris. And I have a friend who drove through Paris 2 weeks ago and he said, it's all quiet. There's nobody on the streets at all. There's no police anywhere. There's no riots. There's no crowds. So I'm just wondering, you know, what's real and what isn't anymore about what, you know, a lot of the reports we're hearing from a lot of these so-called reputable news sites and reputable alternative media sites, you know, who do you trust? Where is the real information? You know, and if you don't have people on the ground yourself, you know, giving you information and telling you what's going on, then how do you know what to believe? Because there's so much of this is fabricated. And, you know, we're being fed lies on so many levels. And the independent media has been infiltrated to such a degree that you've really got to step back and wonder who to trust and only believe that which you can research yourself or that information you get from very, very trusted sources that you're personally familiar with. And that's what I've come to the conclusion of. I mean, I've taken a big step back from a lot of my sources and a lot of the people I even believe to be friends of mine in the independent media recently, because I've looked at the actions of some of these people and things just don't add up. And so, you know, I've become very, very observant in the last probably 6 months and kind of reserved in my responses, because I don't like pointing the finger where it shouldn't be pointed. But I don't think anything is as it seems, put it that way.
Fair enough, Max. There's lots and lots of comments on this, and I'll read out a few of them, but we're going to move on. We're going to talk about a few different things. I've been asked to ask you about Pokemon Go, Max, so prepare yourself for that. lot of talk about that in the last week or so as well. Huberta says, why don't we just ask Tony B. Lawyer? He's been to Bohemian Grove, says Huberta. Wayne says, I have questioned Ike Allen and Max Egan. I always watch for signs of betrayal to the people, but I know they're genuine, says Wayne. Wayne, I'm not modest, but don't ever bracket me with Max Egan and David Icke. I just make programmes. I don't know anything. I provide a platform for people to say what it is that they've discovered. But I'm certainly no, researcher, not on that sort of scale anyway. I'm a mainstream guy who got pissed off with it, and I do this sort of programme now. Maybe I'm controlled opposition without even realising it. Who knows? Number of people suggesting Alex went to Bohemia Grove as a guest. I hope he didn't, but you never know. Chris tweets, it really is strange how he supports Trump. That raises so many suspicions. Marco says he's a shilly lid. So is Watson. And I don't want this to become a big bashing of Watson and Jones. I don't want to do that, but I'll read out these tweets. Sharon tweets, I agree with your guest. InfoWars is controlled opposition. It always has been, says Sharon. Well, I respectfully disagree with my friend Max Egan, and that's okay. We can disagree from time to time as well. I'm not sure it's always been controlled. I think there was genuine ideas there at the beginning. But look, how the hell do I know? It's just my guess as well. Keep the tweets coming in at Richie Allen Show. richie@richieallen.co.uk is the email address. And any sort of question all you want to put to Max, he's in Peru, he's in the jungle, high in the canopies there is Max. A bit like Jurassic Park where he is apparently. And he's going to be with us until the top of the next hour if he's not eaten by something or bitten by a snake. So, loads of questions about Pokemon Go, Max, and the absolute madness of that. Is that evidence that, excuse me, that the, what's the word I'm looking for here now, the David calls it the transhumanist agenda, the transphantomist agenda, rolls on and on and on, and it's snaring more and more people. It's bizarre to me to think that people are actually doing what it is they're doing with their phones. What do you make of all of this?
Well, it is a merging of the virtual world and the real world, absolutely. But the scary part about Pokemon Go is its ability for misuse. I mean, it just opens up your device in so many ways. Part of the contract, it says that it will access your accounts, but it doesn't specify what accounts it's talking about. It says it needs full access to your Google account, which means it can obviously send email and receive email and look at all your photos and all the stuff you're doing on your Google Drive and your YouTube channel and all your history and all that stuff, all your browsing history and all that. But it just says accounts. So what accounts do you have on your phone? Your email account, your bank account, all sorts of accounts you have on your phone. It doesn't specify what accounts it wants to access. They say, oh, this is just a glitch. We'll fix that up. But there's no report that they have fixed it up yet. And also its ability to map its, you know, any its environment, you know, any room you go in. You've got your phone on, your camera on, you've got your kid running around the room looking under desks and stuff. I mean, you think about it. You're a law enforcement agency and you want to investigate some home. You think, well, okay, there's a kid in the house playing Pokemon. Let's just turn on his camera and access his phone, put a Pokemon in the house so he runs around the house and maps the inside of the house for us. We'll know where everybody is, what room they're in. We'll know how many people are there. I mean, the potential for misuse is astounding for this application. You know, and with the terms of service and the agreements that they've got for it, you're simply opening yourself up to a massive surveillance system that people are paying for themselves. And look, I'm not saying that the phone is, you know, everybody who's got this app is constantly transmitting all their data and the whole world's being mapped the way like they did in that last Batman movie, for example. You know, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the potential for misuse and the potential for room mapping and the capabilities it has are absolutely phenomenal. It outstrips anything that they're going to put in the Homeland Security update to the Patriot Act. And everyone arced up at that, said, no, we don't want this. This is a total infringement. You can access too many things. Well, now they can do it all through Pokemon Go. And everyone's paying for it themselves. So it's quite amazing, really, when you look at it. And then, again, there's the whole concept, you know, the whole perspective of it merging this world with the virtual world, which, again, leads down towards the transhumanist agenda and, you know, everything that goes with that. But it's coming from all other directions as well. It's like Cortana, you know. Cortana's listening to you all the time. Your computer's listening to you all the time. But if you say, hey, Cortana, then it'll answer you. And that doesn't mean that it's listening to you all the time and transmitting all the data to Microsoft, but it means that any authority that wants to just tune into your house can access your computer by remote, and Cortana's already there listening to you. All they have to do is access your machine. So, you know, the potential for surveillance with this new software that we're being presented and the tracking capabilities of it all is absolutely off the charts. I mean, you know, they've got pretty good capabilities anyway, simply because most people have got mobile phones and they can check people's browsing history and access people's emails anyway. But to have it all in one, you know, attractive little package that people are going to buy and install on their phones and actually pay for, this is next level, you know.
It's incredible. Int Bell, these Twitter names are brilliant, but Int Bell, I think, is his real name. Millions to set up and maintain a game, and it's free. No adverts. Doesn't anybody else question this, says Int Bell. I didn't realize that it has no adverts. I have, for my sins, I do have one of these smartphones. I don't have
exactly. Look, they're giving you a free game. They're giving you a free game and there's no advertising. So how are they paying for it? I'm sure you've got to buy your Pokemon balls and stuff, but anything they give you for free, it's like Windows 10. They're giving it to you for free. Why do you think they're giving it to you for free? They want you to have it on your phone. They want you to have it installed in your home. They want you to have this surveillance system. That's why they're giving it to you for free.
Incredible, Max. Martin Houston, an activist based in London, good guy, friend of ours, knows a little bit about, well, he knows maybe a lot about IT. He says it is really sinister, but, he says, expected to last until the first kid runs under a truck. Then it will go bust. That might be true, Max, because if kids are going around with their phones, pointing them at various locations, waiting to see will a creature materialize on the screen, it won't be long before a child gets killed.
Well, yeah, probably. And maybe they'd be able to use that to promote the helmet and the headsets and the chips or whatever they have, whatever next level they take it to bring out the new safer version. But yeah, I mean, hopefully it will, something like that will, I mean, I hope that doesn't happen, but hopefully there will be something that causes them to maybe ban it. I mean, I've seen people walking off the edge of piers into the water. So people walking out in front of traffic, people causing car accidents. I mean, it's absolutely outrageous. I mean, I can't see what the attraction is, but,
I don't want to make light of it, Max. I don't want to make light of it, but let me ask you this. Is that the beginning of the so-called zombie apocalypse? Now, I really am not making light of it. Is this the advent of completely numbed, mind-numbed people walking around? I mean, we see them on buses anyway, watching videos, texting their friends. But is this taking it to the level now where this is proper, to coin a phrase, zombification? Is that what it is?
Well, maybe it is. Maybe it's an experiment just to see how far they can go, to see how lost people will actually get in their devices. Who knows? But it certainly is having a major effect on society. And it's very sad to see how quickly people are sucked into it and lost into it, you know. I saw some great posts on Facebook, you know, some Syrian kids saying, you know, looking for their parents while the American kids are looking for their Pokemon. You know, it's quite shocking, you know. And some Syrian kids holding up pictures of Pokemon saying, come and find me, rather than Pikachu. You know,
Jesus Christ.
It's shocking, man. It's really shocking what we're doing, and the way Western society allows itself to get distracted with all this rubbish and all the stuff that they're given to distract them is all part of the surveillance system. And it just, I don't know, it goes a long way to showing the soulless nature of Western society. It really does, how soulless we've become as a species.
Absolutely. Alex Doust tweets, he says, apparently, don't call him on this, but Pokemon don't spawn near roads, says Alex. That would make sense, Alex, if it is true. Adam tweets, Adam, thanks for the tweet. Pedophiles will use this. They will say a rare thingamajig is found in a deserted park and the pedophile will sit and wait, says Adam. I hope that's not true, Adam. It is a strange, and it happened so quick, this Pokemon Go thing. I'm the last guy to learn about anything technical. Before I know it, I'm reading about this and I can't believe it. Karen is in Glasgow. She tweets, I'm worried about children being abducted using this game. And Spirit Samba on Twitter, hi Spirit Samba, I was in my local town the other day and it was like a scene from The Walking Dead. Zombies playing Pokemon Go on phones. Now, anybody who's read David Icke's most recent book, Phantom Self and How to Find as a Real One, will have read the chapter Transphantomism. It talks an awful lot about how the mobile phone was used to get people connected to this virtual world, this other world, constantly staring at your phone in your hand to get your body physically connected to the smart grid. But as he goes into in the book in great detail, David, and other researchers are into this as well, the next level, of course, Max, is implanted technology, isn't it?
Well, it is implanted technology, or perhaps even nanotechnology, perhaps building it even from the ground up inside. I mean, there's all sorts of ways they could do it, but they'll probably go for implants. I mean, I think they've got wristbands and things that go with this whole Pokemon thing. And like it sold something like 1.7 million downloads in the first day or something, or the first week. And Nintendo shares went up 17.5 billion in the first week. So it just shows, you know, what a phenomenon this is. But yeah, I mean, perhaps little wrist things with little holographic displays, perhaps eyepieces that they're talking about, like Google Glass, or perhaps implants. I mean, there's any way they can go. But they're going to realize that, well, we can't have people staring down at their phone, so perhaps Google Glass is the way to go and this sort of stuff. So there's various ways they can do it, but it is locking people into this virtual world, and it is a zombie apocalypse. It really is. I mean, people aren't paying attention to their surroundings anymore, and their surroundings are being destroyed around them, and this prison is being created around them. Their environment is being obliterated while they're locked into this, you know, fancy world that exists behind Google Glass, you know. It's quite remarkable to see.
Becky McWilliams tweets, "How you doing, Becky? I've heard of kids knocking on strangers' doors to ask if they can go into their garden and catch a Pokemon. It's absolutely terrifying," says Becky. Max, this technology, and we can only speculate here, games like this, the implantable technology, the invasion of nanotechnology into our bodies without our knowledge of it. That was a brilliant point you made. Of course, that could come through aerosol as well. We definitely know this. I wonder if this technology, one of the benefits to the system of it, is that it makes us more and more apathetic, not to necessarily what the system is doing, but apathetic to one another, Max.
The removal of empathy. I mean, you've got to wonder, you know, all sorts of things that are going on. There's nanotech in all the food as well. The Australian food regulators started asking the food companies in Australia last year or the year before why they were finding nanotechnology in popular cereals and sauces and dressings and sweets and candy bars. So if that's in Australian food, then you can guarantee it's in British food and American food. It'll be in all Western food. So I have no doubt that they're spraying nanotechnology in the sky, and we know that it's being found in the food. So what is the ultimate goal of all this, and what are they able to do with it? You know, when you look at the smart grid, you know, realizing you're an electromagnetic being, everything you experience is electromagnetic. You know, you touch, you smell, everything. It's, you know, it's all electrical impulses that you feel. So if you've got nanotechnology in your body, how are they able to control that by stimulating it with electrical impulses? I mean, they've done experiments and tests with cats years ago by putting physical devices on their heads and pumping certain frequencies into it, which would change the mood of the cat. But now they're able to do it wirelessly. Now they're able to do it by perhaps putting nanotechnology in people's bodies and hitting it with different wireless frequencies. They've done tests in Japan, I believe, where they were putting nanotechnology in people's blood, and they were switching genes on and off using radio frequencies to do it. So we know that they can affect nanotechnology that is in your blood with radio frequencies. Already done, mainstream science in Japanese medical science. So, you know, we know where they're going with this. So what are the capabilities of it all? What are they capable of actually doing? You know, when you really look at it, you look at some of the tests that they've done, you look at how they're able to construct RNA now, which is DNA's chemical cousin. They're able to create nanoarrays which will modify DNA at a cellular level. You know, so they can do all this inside your body, perhaps with radio frequencies. So where are they going with it all? Perhaps they are creating this whole transhumanist reality, but rather than it being implants, perhaps they're doing it via nanotechnology from the ground up by starting at a genetic level and rebuilding us from the inside out. You know, and there's every indication that's where they're going. And it may sound like science fiction, but, well, you know, you look at what they're capable of, you look at what nanotechnology can do, couple that with the fact that you're an electromagnetic being, couple that with the fact that this massive smart grid's being installed around the place, and they want everybody to have a mobile phone, so everybody's swimming in these frequencies. What's it all about? Where are they all going with it? What are they really capable of? Because, you know, with all the technology we've got, even with Pokemon Go and all the stuff they're doing, you can be guaranteed we're only seeing a tiny sliver of what's on the surface.
No doubt.
A whole lot more they can do that we don't know about yet. So,
No doubt. We've got Susie listening in New Zealand. Crowds of them here in New Zealand too, she says. Let's dumb down the population so that they don't notice their own slow eradication. Loads of interest in this. Wayne tweets, tell Max, I agree that our holistic nature is being murdered. We will be Borg-like soon. Better looking for sale purposes, says Wayne. I want to ask you a question, Max. And I've wanted to ask you this before on programs, going back since we first began talking. And I never got around to asking it. You've been speaking to people and talking about what it is you've learned and discovered for many years. And I know a lot about you that you don't know that I know about you. And one of the things I know about you is that you've never made any money out of it. And money has never motivated you. You've never been interested in that. You go and you talk to people about these things. I was asked a few months back to go and speak to a group of people about the media. I suppose the only bloody thing, I have various academic degrees which are not really worth the papers they're printed on, not in light of what I've learned since leaving university. But I know a lot about the media because I've worked in the mainstream media and I came out of it. And I was asked to go and speak to people and talk to them about it. And I said, right, I might be interested in doing that. And then I realised, Max, that the audience was going to be largely made up of people whom heard the radio programme or had seen the weekly TV programme that I did. And my heart was broken at the idea of doing that. And I began to think about how difficult it is to reach people, Max, who've never heard this information before, to grab people whom they've got a leg in the system and a leg outside it in terms of their understanding of it. How difficult is that to do? You've been going around the world for years, meeting different types of people. Give us an honest opinion, Max, on what that's like. I mean, do you find a lot of the times that you're preaching to people whom already know or have some idea of what's going on, and they've come out to say hello to you because they've seen you on TV or heard you on the radio? Or do you see people at these events that genuinely are brand new to this and are curious? How does it work?
Well, it depends on the events that you go to. You know, like I see a lot of genuine response. I see a lot of people that are new to the information. And even when I do the radio shows, this is why I've kind of kept to the format that I've got with the radio shows. I always start out with a quote, and then I just have a discussion about whatever. I don't try to keep it too esoteric and you know, too up there for the conspiracy world or the awake people to get the latest update. I always assume that there might be someone out there that's listening to the show for the first time, and so I'm just speaking to them. And I try to put enough in there that will awaken someone who's completely new to the information but will still provide enough topical information for people who are fans of the show and regular listeners that will give them something new and something interesting to make them want to keep listening to the show. So it's kind of a fine line. And it depends on the events that you go to. Like in February this year, I went and spoke at the Anacapulco event in Mexico, Anacapulco. And
with Jeff Berwick.
Jeff Berwick, yeah. And that event is mainly for people who are interested in Bitcoin and you know, the financial system, like his dollar vigilante and all that sort of thing. It's, you know, people that are into that type of thing, you know. It's very, very different for me to go and speak to that sort of group of people. And a lot of the people there had never heard of me before and were really, really impressed with the talk and came up to me after the talk. I mean, there were a lot of people there that did know me, but there are a lot of people there who didn't. And they were very impressed and they were very interested to hear that type of perspective. They hadn't heard it before. And so, yeah, it just depends on the talk that you're giving and the place that you are. In 2004, I went and spoke at Boom Festival, which is, you know, a hippie festival, which is mainly run by Israelis. And this was while they were bombing Gaza Strip in 2014. I get invited to go speak at Boom. I didn't even want to take I didn't want to tear myself away from my computer because I had so many friends dying by the day in Gaza Strip, and I was like, I was an emotional wreck, nearly having a nervous breakdown just from so many people dying and the trauma that I was going through. I wasn't even in Gaza, you know. But I ended up going to speak at Boom, and most of the people there had never heard of me. Probably 20 or 30 people in the room had heard of me. I ended up being like 1,000 people or 1,200 people there in Liminal Village listening to me. And, you know, a third of the crowd are Israelis. And even they, a lot of them came up to me after my talk and said they were very appreciative of the stance that I took, how I was very, very critical of the government and the state, but I was kind enough to the people to make them realize that, yes, they have a problem. You know, so it just depends on the crowd, Richie. You've just got to play it by ear. I mean, if you're going there to, you know, and there's all these people there and you're preaching to the choir, well, that's great. I mean, it's good that they're out there to give you some support, and it's great that they want to come and meet you and all that sort of thing. But you can still put something new there in for them, and you're going to find that there's someone there who hasn't heard of you. There's always a few people in the crowd who don't know you who are going to be, you know, awakened by the information. So it's worth doing anyway.
I think it's brilliant. You know, I think it's pretty what you've been doing. One of the things that's just been, I've been watching with interest for the last 18 months is, and again, I mean, unlike what I was doing about InfoWars earlier on, I would never, ever, ever name any names because you never know if you're right or if you're wrong. But I worry about the rise of a phenomenon that I've kind of labelled the celebrity truther phenomenon, Max. Now, I know you know what I'm getting at there, you know. This celebrity truther phenomenon, you know, there are certain people that will put events on, and to me they're a bit like Comic-Con, really. Come and meet the celebrity truther. And I worry about that. I'm never going to name names. That's not for me to do, and I wouldn't even dream of it. But I worry about that, and I'll tell you why I worry about it, because I just worry that it kind of demotivates people to do anything. You're the opposite, because through FullCircleProject.net and through everything else you're doing, you're giving people absolutely viable solutions that they can kind of employ in their daily lives to make change. And I think that's absolutely brilliant. But there are others, I think, and they're not. And I don't think they're necessarily malicious people, Max. I just don't think they understand that it's kind of counterproductive. Ultimately, people need to get off their arses and actually do something. You know where I'm going with that?
Well, yeah, I do. And I talk about that a lot actually on an interview last night when they were sort of praising me and saying I'm this leader of one of the leaders of the truth movement. And I'm saying, well, that's the point, is that I'm not. You know, I'm not a leader. I don't want to be a leader. I never wanted to be a leader. I never planned to be a leader. And I'm not. What I am is an unemployed musician, if you really want to look at it. I'm a guitar player. I'm a social misfit. I'm a social misfit who started smoking weed and playing guitar very young and then dropped out of society. So, you know, I'm nothing special. And that's the point. That's the whole point, is that I have made a difference. I've reached people because I chose to start speaking. And that's all I did, was choose to start speaking. And I'm nobody. I'm just a social misfit guitar player who smokes weed. That's it. You know, you don't have to be somebody special. You don't need a degree. You don't need to be a celebrity. You don't need to have had any experience in media or to be anybody special at all. All you got to do is have your heart in the right spot and be prepared to speak. And the fact that I have made a difference is the whole point, that if you're a complete nobody, you can still make a difference in the world. And that's what I try to stress to people when they tell me I'm a leader or whatever, because I'm not. And that is the point, is that I'm not a leader and I've made a difference. That means you can too. All you've got to do is step into your power and know that you can make a difference and know that you have value, because everybody does. And that's been my message since day one, you know. And the fact that a misfit like me can make a difference should inspire anybody, because there are people who are far more educated and have far more to offer than what I've got to offer. And you know, imagine if these people got motivated to actually make their voice heard. They could make an incredible difference. They'd have the financial backing to do it. I mean, everything I've done with the savings that I collected while I was a musician, and it's got to the point now where I've spent them all, so now I've got to come and live in the third world. And people say, oh, he's over there, he wants money so he can go and get, you know, do ayahuasca in South America. I don't even drink ayahuasca anymore, you know. I mean, I've done all that. I've been there, I've done that. I don't need that type of medicine anymore. I'm doing things like Kumbo, which is the frog venom, which is incredibly cleansing, which isn't any type of hallucinogenic experience. I've been healing a lot of people with that and stuff like that. But,
Can we talk about that in a second? That, because you mentioned earlier on, and I was definitely going to pull you back to it, the jungle medicine. And that, because that's really interesting. And I have tweets to read as well. But what I am going to do is I'm going to take the very briefest of breaks, only 60 seconds, really. Max Egan is on the line to us. I tell you what, Max, you know, touch wood, and I don't want to be, tempting fate, but the quality of the line there from the jungle in Peru is absolutely brilliant. We're getting it loud and clear. So good, in fact. Some of our listeners think he's lying, Egan. He's in a bathroom next to Richie's studio with the shower running in the background there. That's how good it sounds. So stay with me, my friend. It's only 60 seconds. At the moment, I can't talk to my guests off air, so you'll hear the break. Stay there, and we'll be back in a minute. As the great Max Egan is on the line to us from Peru. Lovely to have him back on the program. Been a long time, 8 or 9 months since Max was on. About time we caught up with him back after these. Tickle. Welcome back to the program. It's the 27th of July. It's Wednesday's program, live from the great city of Manchester. For all the problems with the internet and surveillance and everything Max Egan said about it earlier on, I endorse, by the way. What an extraordinary thing it is to be here in Manchester, not too far from the city centre, and to be chatting with Max in Peru. And the ease with which we can do that. When I started out on radio years ago, you had to phone, and it was incredibly expensive. And not only that, but the lines were often terrible. Loads of tweets coming in. At Richie Allen shows the Twitter. Richie at richieallen.co.uk. Big hi to Andrew Bugler. Andrew, it's spelt B-U-G-L-E-R, like Bugler. But I think it's probably Bugler. Andrew wants a shout out. He's been listening to the programme for about 6 months and follows David Icke on YouTube as well. So you've asked me for a shout out. You're in Bristol. I've given you the shout out there. Hi to Seb Land as well. Seb, how are you? Nice to hear from you. And to Davey, who was listening to the monologue yesterday about the greatest lie ever told by the media. Spent about an hour last night using a lot of audio talking about who ISIS and who Al-Qaeda really are, where the names came from, who named those groups, and the fact that they're not really these all-powerful crime syndicate networks. That it's just a collection of different people, different jihadists and warlords and clerics who want to kind of impose their own brand of Islamist society in their own towns and in their own countries. It's interesting stuff. It's on YouTube now. Thanks to Simon Stewart for doing that. Folks, go to thecrowhouse.com. Go to fullcircleproject.net. Terrific that Max Egan is with us on the program today. A few hours behind us. So it's in the late afternoon, early evening now in Peru there. Sounds like there was a bit of a tropical downpour there in the background a few minutes ago. Loads of interest in this. Still lots of questions coming in. Not questions, but comments coming in about Pokemon and surveillance and all of that sort of stuff. It's incredible. Max, John Foley says, the great thing about Max is the simplified way in which he explains things. Great man. That's a very important skill for any communicator, that is to be able to break it down so that everybody gets it and that you're not leaving anybody out. That's really important, that. Max, did you ever think to yourself, I wish I'd never learned any of this stuff. It was better. Life was better when I didn't know what was going on. Life was simpler.
Well, the problem is that I always knew what was going on. You know, ever since I was about 4 years old, I realized the world was all messed up. And I kind of lived on the outside of it all from that point. You know, I was convinced that I'd been born onto the wrong planet and that everybody here was mad when I was 4. So I never really had that pleasure of not being awake and being in the Matrix. I kind of I had a terrible childhood because I thought I was living in an insane asylum. I got kicked out of every school that I went to because I was arguing with my teachers because I didn't think that what they were teaching me was anything that you could call valuable knowledge. And I used to question a lot of what they were teaching me because I knew other versions of some of the things they were teaching me about history and stuff. And so I used to question them. And so, yeah, terrible time. So I basically became a musician so that I didn't have to participate in society and I'd have plenty of time to research why the world was so messed up. So that was kind of my life. So, yeah, I mean, it would have probably been better had I not known. But it all worked out the way it was supposed to, I think.
I wonder about it because my I'm not going to bore you or anybody else with what happened to me. I said it before. I began having read the Alice in Wonderland book by David, you know, became very embarrassed about my conduct as a presenter, because I worked on September 11th. I broadcasted live to a huge audience in the Republic of Ireland in Munster, along with my presenter. I was a producer, but I was on air with him and doing all of that, and felt a bit embarrassed later on for not, you know, asking questions and for just basically parroting the narrative that we were given. And I did sometimes think, you know, in the years following that, maybe if, you know, if I had never read that book and not encountered David, you know, I'd have a pretty comfy life, Max. You know, I'd be, you know, presenting somewhere in the mainstream. You know, I'd have a few bob coming in, 2.3 children, the apartment in Spain, and life would be pretty cushy. But of course, I don't really believe that. But it does cross your mind occasionally. So it does. Right. Martin Oakes tweets, Max Egan, what a great and informed guest. Thanks for getting these quality people on, Richie. Well, all we do is extend the invitation, Martin. And thankfully, most people say yes, they're happy to come on, which is wonderful for us. So about number of people. Now, a lot of people are asking me tonight about your take on people like Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn. So this programme has gotten into a little bit of trouble, because when these guys like Jeremy Corbyn get elected, Max, because of what I've learned, I immediately start warning people that these guys are going to disappoint in the long term, and not to be seduced by your own belief as to who these people are. Don't be seduced by that. Remember all the other messiahs that let you down in the past, and that ultimately I don't believe there can be any change through the political process, that it's going to require something different. They get upset, these people, Max, and most of them are very good people. They're decent people. They're anti the brutalization of the poor. They're anti taking much needed money away from people with disabilities. These are good people. And they think somebody like Jeremy Corbyn or Bernie Sanders is the way forward. And they get very, very, very upset when presenters like me don't endorse it in any way, shape or form. How do you cut through that with people? How do you get people to have a second look and not take it so personally when you criticise their hero or heroine who's left them down, as undoubtedly Jeremy Corbyn, Alexis Tsipras in Greece, the Podemos party in Spain, and of course Bernie Sanders? How do you get to people? How do you reach those people, Max? These are good people.
Well, look, it's difficult because people want something to believe in, and they want to think that there's a remedy in the system, you know. Like, but it's all controlled. The whole thing's controlled. I mean, voting for Bernie Sanders, the best you can get for, if Bernie Sanders got the nomination, the best you could hope for would be you may slow the agenda down for maybe, you might buy yourself a year or maybe 2 years. They'd have to push the agenda forward a little bit slower and be a little bit more apologetic about it if Bernie Sanders was elected. But, I mean, he's controlled opposition. I mean, of course he is. You've got to have that old farmer type, down-home guy, like, you know, the Bernie Sanders, the Ron Paul, the Jeremy Corbyn types there to, you know, appease the normal people, want someone normal there that isn't like Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or some, you know, showboat. So, you know, you've got to give them someone that seems sincere. But look, what did Bernie Sanders do when he lost the nomination? He urged everybody to vote for Hillary Clinton. What does that tell you? I mean, you know, for God's sake. I mean, anybody in the United States, for a start, if they're running for office, then they've got to sign the AIPAC pledge to get funding for office. So if they've signed the AIPAC pledge, it means they pledge allegiance to the state of Israel. So they're a traitor already. So in order to get funding to run for office in the United States, they've got to sign that pledge. Otherwise, they won't get funding. They won't ever get anywhere. Their campaign will fail. No one will even hear about them. They get no media coverage. Nothing will happen if they don't sign that pledge. So, you know, they're compromised from the beginning. You know, unfortunately, the people in the United States, they want something to hope for. They need something to believe in. And so they believe they have to go for the best of a bad bunch, you know. And so they do, you know, probably in the hope that they can slow the agenda down. You know, not get any real change, but maybe slow the agenda down. I mean, the thing with the United States, I mean, it's not compulsory to vote. So they could just not vote. But the problem is that all the criminals will vote. And it doesn't matter. You might only have 10,000 people in the country vote. But if they all vote for Hillary Clinton, then guess who the new president is? It's Hillary Clinton. Even though nobody wants her and only 10,000 people voted, doesn't matter. Nobody has cared because they didn't care to vote. So that's the weird thing that you've got in the United States. In Australia, it's compulsory to vote. You have to vote or you get fined. So what we saw in Australia was that 25% of the country pulled away from the major parties and voted for anybody but the above and just voted for random independents, which is a pretty good show of solidarity that we're sick to death of the government. So that's one sort of a standard they made. They completely messed them up that way. But, you know, it's weird. We've got different political systems in each country. And, you know, unfortunately, the way through the American the state that America is in is by voting, but voting for the right person. But you're never going to get the right person as a candidate because they didn't sign the AIPAC pledge, so you're never going to see them. You know what I mean? It's this loop that you've put in, you know. I mean, you could actually save the American political system by voting for the right candidate because the political system is actually set up to work if the people were aware of it, you know. But the whole rest of what is behind that system is set up so that can never work. So I don't know what's going to bring about change in that country, but it isn't going to be by voting. You know?
Well, it's funny you mentioned the AIPAC pledge, and I must again refer our listeners to an interview I did with Cynthia McKinney last year, where she spoke for nearly an hour about nothing other than the attack, because that's all you can describe it as, the assault by the Israeli lobby. She'd only been in her office, Max, a few hours. She hadn't even put her favourite picture of her grandmother on the table. She hadn't even hung up her, high school diploma. And they were in the office asking her to sign the pledge. It's an amazing interview. Not amazing because I had anything to do with it. I just sat there and shut up and let her talk. It's on YouTube. Go and look for Richie Allen, Cynthia McKinney on YouTube. It's amazing. I think it's been seen by over 100,000. 150,000 or something like that. People have listened to it now, and the podcast had tens of thousands as well, because never have I heard it put like that. She hadn't even her feet under the desk, Max. Signed a pledge,
well,
signed a pledge.
Yeah. That's the way it is, and it's like that for every politician. If you don't sign it, then you're not going to get anywhere. So every single politician that you are even looking at in the United States, no matter how sincere they appear to be, they pledge allegiance to a foreign power. They pledge allegiance to a foreign power, which is essentially carrying out war crimes, is in breach of Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, and every one of them is therefore a war criminal by default if their own legislation and their own laws were to be applied to them. So that's the position that you're dealing with in virtually all Western politics. You know, every single politician in the Western world who supports the state of Israel is supporting breaches of Article 33, and each one of them is a war criminal by default. I mean, I keep arguing that this is the key to heal the whole thing, you know, if you really look at Gaza Strip. I mean, just the fact that it exists indicates these people are all war criminals, and they can all be arrested under their own law in all of our countries. If you want to stop coal seam gas mining or whatever issues that you're dealing with in your country, well, chances are that politician who enacted that legislation you're trying to deal with is supporting the state of Israel, so is therefore a war criminal by default under their own legislation and can be arrested and removed from office right now and all their legislation rolled back. If people would simply open their eyes to what Gaza really represents. And that's why I talk about Palestine so much, to the point that people are probably sick to death of me talking about Palestine. But I don't see that it holds a legal key. It holds a legal key. If that law is not to be applied to all the politicians, then that would indicate that there is no law on this earth. And I would suggest that that is the true case. There is no real law on this earth. The whole place is run by criminals that have got everybody hoodwinked. And it's about time we called it. You know, either have the law apply to everybody or admit that there is no law and let's do something about getting these criminals out of power and sticking them somewhere like on Christmas Island or something. Give them all a hammer each and they can have their war.
Never stop talking about Gaza, mate, because it gets no coverage whatsoever in the mainstream media unless the Israelis start telling lies about rockets and start killing people. You know, it's the biggest prison.
I reckon, Richie, half the reason this Islamophobic mentality has been whipped up is to lead people away from the legal ramifications of Gaza Strip and the legal key that that holds to heal the entire world, to arrest this entire cacistocracy. Because all of them, every single one of the politicians that are running Western countries, are all provable war criminals under their own law. But people won't call it because they're scared to death of Muslims. And they think that Gaza Strip is this den of Muslim terrorists. When it's not, it's a impoverished population of mainly children, 35% Christian, 50% women, and 900,000 children. I mean, it's ridiculous. People just need to open their hearts up to these people in this place and realize that not only can they heal this child abuse and this collective punishment that's going on there, but they can heal every single legal problem and every political problem that we're facing in our own countries by identifying the fact that the people carrying out all of this legislation are all provable war criminals under their own law in each respective country and under international law. Now, this is a huge key for everybody if they could simply open up their hearts. And it's this Islamophobic mentality that the governments and the media and this whole fake war on terror and all these staged events is whipping up, which is preventing people from ever looking at this and seeing it for what it is and seeing the opportunity that it provides humanity for, real freedom, a chance for real freedom, once and for all. We've never had a better opportunity for freedom than what Gaza Strip provides for us.
I'm going to read a few tweets on that. Sue tweets, Sue, who knows you, as Tony Benn said, there can be no peace in the world until the Palestinians get their homeland back. Valkyrie tweets, because these people are psychopaths. Wayne tweets, never sick of Palestine. Good people do nothing, then we are as bad as. Evil is free at the moment to do as it likes, tweets Wayne. Let me just scroll down there. Thanks, Martin, for tweeting the Cynthia McKinney interview about AIPAC, which is just an amazing, almost like a stream of consciousness from Cynthia about what it was like dealing with these people. Let me scroll down. There's a really interesting, couple of interesting comments. Paul Jackson tweets, ask Max where his family came from before Australia. Are you one of us, Max? I think you're one of us, aren't you? You're an Irishman. Have you lost
Well, it? actually, I am a direct descendant. This is trippy. I'm a direct descendant from the last king of Scotland.
Go on.
If there was a king in Scotland today, it would be me, because I'm the oldest son of the oldest child right down the line from the last king of Scotland. My mother came out on the first fleet to Australia, and she married my father, who came out with the convicts. He was from the convict line, but my mother was from the Scottish line, and she was the oldest child, and I was the only son that she had. We had a crest of arms, and the mask was open. The visor was open, which indicates aristocracy. And we had apparently owned a bunch of castles and a couple of islands and a city block in London that my great great grandfather gambled away on the first fleet on the way out and lost all the deeds to. But apparently, I'd be the king of Scotland if there was still a king of Scotland. So, but hey, they were deposed by the other psychopathic line. And but I don't think he was a good guy anyway. I think they were probably a bunch of assholes. Can I say that?
But you anyway, can, yeah. You can say whatever you want. So
that's maybe why I'm so rebellious. I don't do authority very well because I come from that line. So I've always been kind of highly spirited. But apparently that's my line.
It's got to have something to do with it. Joe Cusack asks this: what was first, Max? Guitar Awakening? The guitar can be an early introduction to abstract thought. It's even shaped like a key, says Joe Cusack. That's very true.
Well, I was awake when I was four. I woke up to the fact that something was terribly wrong. I heard the Beatles when I was six, and I knew right then that I was going to be a guitar player. And so I don't know what came first. It was the whole thing. As soon as I was old enough to get a guitar and to step outside of school and outside of the system, I did so. But so I knew I was going to do that from when I was six, but I knew the world was all messed up by the time I was four. So
we're getting loads of tweets and loads of emails. Alan Burton is just the I met Alan in Manchester earlier this year. Really nice guy. Alan, thanks for your email. Listening to you and Max Ritchie, Max sounds relaxed and calm. the antidote to Alex Jones and Paul Joseph Watson. I could have mentioned, by the way, when Max was talking about Gaza, Gaza and the monumental war crimes that are committed daily against the people of Gaza get very little, if any, coverage on InfoWars. Ask yourself why. Now, Alan didn't say that. That's me. Alan says, Max mentioned Cambo Medicine. And he says to me, if you want to learn more or experience this, his friend is a local practitioner. But Max, you mentioned jungle medicine earlier on. It's 23 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got probably 10 to 12 minutes left on this before we have to leave it for. It's flown by the way. I hope it's flown by for you. It's been a very quick hour and nearly 10 minutes so far. What is Cambo medicine, Max? What is it?
Cambo is actually, it's a venom from the most toxic frog in the Amazon rainforest. It's a giant green tree frog. They actually catch the frog and they tie it down and they scrape the venom from its skin. And you actually burn holes. They come along, they get a little stick, a flaming stick, and they burn holes in your arm and they pack the venom onto your arm into the holes. They burn the holes, they remove the epidermis and expose the dermis, and then they pack the venom onto the dermis, and you have a quite horrendous experience. You feel like you've been poisoned because you have, and it's quite horrible, quite a horrible experience, but it's incredibly healing. You know, what it does, the Cambo goes directly into your lymph system, and it bonds with heavy metals and toxins and dioxins that you have in your body. And it basically pulls them into your blood system. Your immune system freaks out, dumps it all into your stomach, and you purge the whole lot up. You drink about 2.5 to 3 liters of water before you have the combo applied. And then you basically spend the next 40 minutes vomiting in a terrible, terrible way.
Oh.
Deep, deep bile. Very often you'll swell up like a frog as well. It's quite a horrible experience, but after you've done
you've experienced this.
I've done it, several times. I've learned how to serve it. I'm actually treating people with Cambo now as well. I've had a couple of people come to see me. I've actually served, 5 people in the last week. I've served Cambo.
Now, what would you, prescribe it for, Max?
Everything. Healing. Incredible. Like I said, it supercharges your immune system. It basically adds 20 years to your life. Most people have it during the experience. The general reaction is, oh my God, why did I do this?
Yeah, yeah.
And then an hour later, they're like, when can I do it again? You know, it's the most horrendous thing as you're experiencing it. You think, oh my God, they've given me too much or whatever. You know, I've been poisoned. But it removes everything. It systematically removes blockages. It gives you an incredible clarity. They used to give it to warriors the day before battle. They would give it to warriors the night before the hunt so that they could sense the hunt, sense the prey before they could see it. Your higher senses are supercharged. You'll find that you don't get sick. Last time I had Cambo, I went home and everybody around me was falling over with this insidious cold that everybody had. And they're saying, oh, you're going to get it. You always get it worse than everybody. And it just bounced off me. I didn't get a thing. You know, you find you won't get sick for probably 3 months after a Cambo treatment. Your awareness is heightened. Your senses are heightened. You feel strong. You feel focused. You feel balanced. Amazing clarity, things that you weren't sure of in your life. Incredible clarity. A couple that I know that had been together for 23 years did Cambo, and after the Cambo session, they looked at each other and said, "Hey, listen, I've been actually faking it for the last 15 years." And the guy said, "Yeah, actually, I have too." But so they went on their merry ways and were quite happy about it. But just that clarity it provided to them to be able to walk away from something that they'd been holding onto in a state of dependency, and to be able to do so with absolute clarity and absolute friendship and absolute acceptance, and just to realize that they weren't on their path.
How amazing, yeah. Max. You know, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, how little I know. I mean, I never heard of Cambo medicine till today, and this absolutely intrigues me. Your description of it is at once honest and also absolutely petrifying. I'm squeamish, me. I'm a bit of a coward, you know. I've just returned to the dentist after years of staying away to have some essential stuff done, and I'm terrible. I can't stand it.
Whether it's purging or sweating or crying, or sometimes people can get a state of bliss. I mean, you will find an incredible array of things are possible with this medicine. But the supercharge it gives to your immune system and the clarity. Like I had meningitis a couple of years ago. I got meningitis. And meningitis is a very, very debilitating illness. It takes a year to 2 years to recover from it. And after the initial sickness and the initial debilitation, when you're back up and you're on your feet and you're walking around, it's slow recovery. But after about 8 months of that, you kind of forget that you were sick. You forget that, you had this illness and you just think, oh, gee, I'm getting old. I'm just run down. It's just harder to do things now. I'm just always tired now. You just have these thoughts. It just becomes your normality that you're this run down. I was like that about 12 months after I'd had meningitis. And then I did the combo for the first time. And the next day after doing the combo, I was like, oh, my God, I did not realize how sick and how run down I was. And then when I got home, I got a massage from my regular masseuse who does me once a week, and she's been working on these knots trying to get them out of my body for a year. And she did my body, and she did this massage, and she said, this is like a new body, Max. I don't know what you've done, but all of those blockages are gone. And when I find a blockage, I can just squeeze into it, and it just breaks up and it goes. She said, I don't know what you've done. This is more than diet. I don't know what it is you've done. You've only been away 2 months, but the change in your muscle system is phenomenal. The clarity and the cleanness of the flow of the muscles now. And I just went, oh, it's the combo. So that's my experience with this medicine. And the amount of healing that I got from it was so phenomenal that it's the one medicine that I thought I have to learn how to serve this, because I can heal so many people with this medicine. If they're prepared to go through that experience, the healing is so worth it. It's like a 10-year the detox of your whole life. It's like a 50-day fast in 40 minutes. It's
how
incredible.
Amazing is that? We've had comments on this, of course. At Site Restored on Twitter, is it a parasite cleanse? Then it sounds like one. It kills off the negative creatures that block our energies. Wayne says, Richie, some might argue you are so glad to still be alive, you are euphoric at the end of it. Nikki says, Richie, I need Cambo in my life now. This is my mate Nikki in Scotland. My immune system is non-existent. Sounds brilliant. Loving listening to Max, says Nikki. And David Kona tweets, alternative medicine is the way to go. And he's included Mike Lambert's Twitter handle in there, at the Shen Clinic. Lou. Sorry, go ahead, Max.
Well, Cambo is legal. It's perfectly legal.
It's legal, yeah.
Find a practitioner in your country. So there you go. You will find some people. They charge you through the nose. I do it, and I just do it for free. And I'd say if you want to make a donation, that would be great. But people will charge you maybe $150 to $220, maybe $450 to $500 for three treatments. And it's best to do three treatments in one moon cycle to get the full benefit. And to do that maybe two or three times a year. But it is legal in all countries, so look for a practitioner in your area. Cambo Cleanse with a K.
How amazing, Max. How amazing. We're not long before we have to wrap it up. I've got to take a break anyway. It's been really great catching up with you. We've covered a lot, I think, in the time that we've had. Max can be found at thecrowhouse.com as well. And FullCircleProject.net. We've chatted about Full Circle Project in the past. That's very worthwhile. There's some great ideas in there about challenging illegal legislation and tyrannical local authorities. It's all about things you can do on a local level, around you and around your home and among your friends. It's very important. Where are we, Max? Where are we? What's your gut feeling? As a collective consciousness, where are we in terms of taking on this cabal, this elite, this system? Is it inevitable that we're going to win in the end? Is there more misery to come before we do that? Or have we reached the top of the hill? Where do you think we are?
Look, I think there's more misery to come, but I think we are going to get through it in the end. I really do mean the movement's been so fractured and divided, and there's been so much division and infighting in this whole response to the system. But I think we're going to come through to the end. I mean, the wheels are falling off in so many ways. You know, everyone's seeing through all their false flag attacks, but, I mean, they're still coming. They're still pushing them. The media's still pushing them. The legislation's still rolling out. But I think people can only be pushed so far before they will stand up and realize that any action they take against this system is essentially self-defense. I mean, you know, we're under attack. There's a war being waged, and it's you know, World War III, it's already happening, and it's you know, I said that back in my first film in 2008. The World War III has already started, and it's a war that's being waged by the governments against the people of the world. You know, a war of depopulation, a war of control. And it's going on for every level. I mean, you know, vaccines, the chemtrails, the spraying, the GM food, the wars, the smart grid, everything they're doing. So it's about time people realize that we've got to stop being politically correct about it and take the bull by the horns and call things out for what they are. And like I said, you know, if they're looking for legal remedy in any of the system for any of the problems that they're facing on the ground, you know, you have some legislation you're facing and you try to tackle it in court, well, forget it. You're never going to win. You know, it's a stacked deck. What you need to do is look at who enacted that legislation and see, is that person supporting the state of Israel? Because if they are, then that would indicate that person's a war criminal under their own law. So we need to establish that. We need to address that fact in order to establish whether the legislation you're attempting to inflict on me is even valid. Because according to their own law, according to the law of this nation, this person's a war criminal, which renders everything they say and do invalid. And that's the approach we need to take. The Gaza Strip provides a key for it. You know, when people can see that and they can start applying their spiritual understandings to the physical world, open up their hearts to the kids in Gaza, they're going to see that's the key to save the whole world. There isn't another issue. There isn't Tibet. There isn't Venezuela. There isn't Yemen. There isn't any other issue on earth, as atrocious as they may be, the factory farming, the abuse of animals, the everything, any issue you can think of, all of them are horrendous. But there isn't one that provides a global legal key that can be used to take out the entire cacostrocracy around the world, and that's Gaza Strip. That's the only one that does it. So I think the more we push that and the more we lead by example in what we do in our own communities and make people aware of the opportunities that we've got and the situation that we're facing, then I don't think they have a hope in hell of holding us back, you know. You know, I think a lot of people, even the police, a lot of the politicians, they know that they're on the wrong side of history, and a lot of them are going to break ranks. A lot of them are going to side with the people when push comes to shove. And we can make push come to shove a little bit quicker if we stand up, if we do it politely and eloquently, and you know, don't be a rabble, don't make a noise, don't you know, don't rah 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 and be violent about it, but just be polite and eloquent and steadfast in what we say, and be as public as we can about it, lead by example in what we do. I think we will see a shift, and I think it's coming more and more by the day. So yeah, keep on trucking, everybody. We are getting there.
Legend.
That lady hasn't sung yet.
We'll catch up with you later on in the year, in the autumn. It certainly won't be as long between visits. TheCrowHouse.com and FullCircleProject.net. That was absolutely rapid. That's as fast in 80 minutes as we've done on this program. We covered a lot today. Lots of success to you in Peru. And thanks for sharing some of your time with us today. Again, brilliant, Max. Thanks a lot, mate. Talk to you soon.
It's always a pleasure to come on, brother. It's absolutely flown by, that 90 minutes. Feels like 30, so thanks for having me on, brother. Talk again next time.
It was an honour. Max Egan on the line to us there from Peru. And thanks to all you, thanks to you for all your tweets and all your emails there. Obviously, I couldn't read out all of them. As I say, and I've said before time and time again, to see what other people are tweeting, you need only go to Richie Allen. Go to my Twitter handle, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, in, press enter, and then away you go. Going to take a very quick break, back in a minute.